Will you spend another summer working on your yard for your spouse, kids, and guests? Or would you rather spend the summer with your spouse, playing with the kids, and relaxing with guests? Hire Blue Duck Lawn Care to get the super healthy lawn you'll love and neighbors will envy. Blue Duck does the fertilizing and weed control. You just mow to get a lush, thick lawn. Best in your neighborhood. If it's got to be green, hire Blue. BlueDuckLawnCare.com. Remember, if it's got to be green, hire Blue. BlueDuckLawnCare.com.
Tony Katz, the Morning News, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins, filling in 6:07 now, Friday morning. My bad. I thought it was Monday for a second there. That's odd. That's an odd mistake. Would be the worst thing ever if you're expecting a Friday and you fell into a Monday. Let's do this. First and foremost, the EU and now the United States are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, while a whole lot of people in Israel, all the people in Israel, I think, and this came from Tony's reporting when he was there, want the opposite. They want to make sure that Hamas is removed from this planet completely and entirely. And ceasefire, stopping any of those sort of things, allow Hamas to regroup, replan, et cetera, et cetera. It is not necessarily surprising that the United States is now a part of this call because the people in charge are definitely going to be pressured by the side of the aisle that has been screaming for this for a while. That's demonstrating to them, to everyone in, politics, not necessarily in society or in the world, but in politics, that this is the right decision for them politically. Now, granted, the EU and others calling for this put Israel in a very awkward situation, to say the very least about it. So what actually happens, what actually occurs from here, I don't know. I do know that if, say, Israel listens, say they actually do what everyone is telling them to do now, or, well, at least these politicians are telling them to do, and then Hamas has another attack on the Israeli people, I imagine that is something that Israel would respond to in a certain way and demonstrate the belief system in a certain way, however you want to say it. I don't know the right way to say it, but I would describe it as the worst case scenario for our relationship with our most important ally in the Middle East, the United States' most important ally in the Middle East. So whatever occurs from this point on, I don't know. But it seems like we're in the situation that we probably could have been in weeks ago. Because of the politics at play, not necessarily, again, because of what makes sense here. Because I'll say one last thing about this, and I don't mean to harp on this for too long or whatever. But the last thing I'll say is that during the first attack in October, there was a ceasefire. That's something that probably a lot of people need to remember about this entire situation. All right, I want to play one other thing, and then we'll take a quick break. Or, well, you know what? Actually, I'll save the audio. Let's do this instead. There's been a lot of conversations about whether or not the RNC will pay Trump's legal bills. And I think, obviously, as many people do, I think everybody probably should believe this now, it's in the RNC's best interest, since Trump is now the Republican nominee, to pay legal bills, to help in that way, to funnel money the way that they've been doing it before. What I think is so interesting about this is how many people on the far left, and that's kind of some of the audio I'll play a little later on, are screaming and yelling about this as if it makes no sense, as if it's terrible and horrible and, utterly unfair. That is hilarious to me in one sense, because if Trump were the nominee of the Democratic Party, the Democratic National Committee would be paying the legal bills. That's how it would be occurring right now. And so that doesn't mean putting up the bond in New York, and that's a whole nother conversation for sure. When we're talking about Trump and we're talking about what's going on today or what's going on Monday, Monday is the deadline for him to come up with $500 million. And if he doesn't do that, then darn it, he's going to start losing properties, according to New York and Letitia James. So I find so many parts of this so fascinating and so, intentionally difficult for the former president of the United States. And then I find a lot of the calls to change the behavior or do something different, ridiculous, in all honesty, because if all these court cases hadn't come against Trump, hadn't come after him, he wouldn't be spending the money on defending himself in courtrooms. If they had waited, say, till after this election cycle and then decided to bring charges against Trump. They waited long enough. They could have waited a little longer. He wouldn't be using campaign donations to pay for those bills. But darn it, that was the choice of those who came after him when he was still a relevant political nominee, if not much more than that. All right, we'll take a break. It's early. It's Friday morning. I promise the energy will come for me, and I hopefully it comes for everybody else too. A quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in, Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIPC.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a doll around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day.
Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Matt and Carl hanging out as they do every single morning. This is kind of an odd story. I can't help but ask a question about it, though. So a woman accidentally filmed herself via a Zoom call, like many women or many people do, doing stuff she didn't want people to see. Essentially, she was taking a shower and wasn't aware that that was on the Zoom call. Here's the most awkward part of this that makes it different than other stories like this, though. She was at a funeral. She was Zooming into a funeral, and she didn't know the entire time that she was on Zoom taking a shower until she showed up in person to the wake, and people there are like, hey, we just want you to know a couple things happened during the first part of this thing that make us feel like you don't really care about the individual and also make it awkward for us to be looking at you in person. I don't know how I would just leave if I was this person, no matter what my connection is to the individual. And this happened in London. I'd be like, you know what? I've definitely done enough here. I'm just going to go. But any reaction to woman accidentally Zoom showering during a funeral?
We all have our different way to mourn, Craig, and who's the judge? I mean, some people.
Sure.
No, it's, you cut her out of the will, you're good with it. But I remember these Zoom calls were really tricky, man. When Urban yes. One first bought out MS Communications, we had an all-staff meeting and go by Zoom. And, I did it from my apartment. And gotcha. I don't want to go into detail, but my apartment is my place. And I kind of do what I want as far as dressing. Well, sure. I didn't have the video off switch whenever I logged into the meeting. It was me and 50 other people. And I'm like, that's going to be a human resources violation, but thankfully nobody said anything. I mean, I get it. Listen, the problem is the woman wasn't respecting the funeral. That's what you have to do. If you are going to take part in something, you want to be authentic, and to do that is to actually care about the person and the family of the bereaved. So, I think she has some values that may need to be taken into question a little bit here.
Yeah, no, dude, absolutely. I agree so much, because the first reaction I have is, all right, we've seen this story before. Somebody does something on Zoom that they don't want people to see, and I guess you can forgive it. We have not seen this story very often where it involves somebody in a funeral, which definitely makes you feel very different about not just the sights that you've now seen of whoever the family member is, whether or not you wanted to see those things. I imagine many people probably did not want to see those things. And then beyond that, part two, the whole fact that now, you got to deal with, I don't even know how you'd explain that. If I were this person who showed up at this thing and I was like, I couldn't make it. I was on Zoom though, and it was a beautiful service. And they're like, really? You thought so? I guess we got to let you know some stuff. I don't know how you'd try to spin it if you were that woman. That's why, again, I said I'd just leave. I would have no excuse. I just be like, all right, guys, I'm sorry. This is the end of the road for me with this whole situation. I'll see you guys at some other point. All right. Another story out there that I like a lot. I thought this was interesting. The stuff that you're likely to throw away after someone of a different generation. I don't know why there's so many of these stories out there for me to start the show, but someone of a different generation leaves these things to you. And so it's called millennial junk. This is stuff that they think doesn't matter at all. I guess a lot of these things are like boxes that people save or other cherished items, rubber bracelets, promotional items, Dave Matthews Band t-shirts that stood in line to wait for a concert in 2001. The reason I love that one is someone actually did this in Goodwill. They donated a beloved T-shirt, I guess, from somebody who's a huge Dave Matthews fan and had no idea about it. DVDs that people have, CDs, all kinds of stuff that people think is just old technology. And finally, a collection of water bottles and thermoses is something that wound up at a Goodwill that I guess someone just didn't want to keep. Any reaction to this, to the idea that there's stuff that even if you care about it, if you leave it to somebody of a different generation, they're not going to care at all?
No, I mean, that's what the way it's supposed to be, right? I mean, the things I care about, you know, if the next generation doesn't care about that, I mean, it was important to me. It was special to me. I have those special memories that I made for myself. And yeah. Those memories, they're particular. They're personal, man. And I can't expect somebody else to pick up my old stuff and be like, yeah, this is great. Oh, man, this reminds me of Matt's dad. You know, that kind of thing, you know? I mean,
I'm going to hang on to it.
Yeah. And to me, there's kind of a level of, what about me-ism, right? A level of ego, sure, by saying, you know, I expect people to care about the same things that I do. So, yeah, I kind of get it. But at the same time, you know.
Let me ask you this, though, because and it wasn't a family member of mine. I'm not outing myself as a mean person, but it was a friend of mine that I knew. His grandfather had just collected all the newspapers, like just every newspaper. He was one of those guys that saved them forever. He had a crap ton of them, to say it the nice way. And I remember when he wound up getting left them, my friend, he was like, what do I do? I have hundreds and hundreds of newspapers, and they meant a lot to my family member who's no longer here with me. But like, I don't want to keep this many newspapers. I think he does still have them. I think he got a storage thing and he's paying a monthly thing. And it's been years now, and there's just a bunch of newspapers in a storage facility. But what do you do in those situations where you're like, this to them meant enough that it's in the will, but to me, it's not necessarily a thing? And who do you leave it to, I guess, if you hang on to it for a long time?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, who do you leave it? I mean, I have my grandpa's spittoon, you know, sitting in my kitchen right now, and it's underneath the sink. I have like,
awesome,
like 1,000 kitchen cabinets to one closet in my apartment. But it's grandpa's spittoon. And to my day, I'm like, okay, this is cool. It's from grandpa. And he did beautiful,
yes,
things with his life. He fought in the Korean War. I mean, the man was a,
wow,
war hero. He's just, you know, just this outstanding person. I don't want a spittoon. You know, mm-hmm, so, and I feel kind of bad about that, but at the same time, what do I do with this thing? Yeah. I have a one-bedroom apartment. Yeah. I have no room for this, and I have several other oddities that I'm like, yeah, this is cool, but you know, if I have a child and I give him a spittoon, I wouldn't be surprised if he took the spittoon and knocked me over the head with it. He's like, what are you doing to me, Dad?
It's a weird connection we have, by the way, that my grandfather also fought in Korea and does tell stories about being a war hero, although I'm pretty sure he cut himself with a knife in the kitchen, and that's why he got sent home with a Purple Heart, or at least is what he used to say. I don't know which one is true or not, but that's a weird connection we have, apparently.
That's cool,
Yeah, that's awesome. One last quick thing. I know we got to take a break in just a bit for traffic, but restaurants now in some places are creating a non-refundable deposit if you create a reservation, especially if you don't show up. I think the deposit gets applied to your bill if you actually do show up, but there are restaurants now, at least some places, I don't think there are any in Indianapolis that are doing this, although maybe you can let me know, but 28% of Americans admit that they make reservations and just skip them, and restaurants are sick of this, apparently, so they're trying to fight back in a weird way.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, hey, I'm going to come over to your house and spend the night and then not show up, you know,
yeah,
like say, you know, or getting ghosted by a woman. So I'm a little personal about this. It's, you know, yeah, it's just basic decency. I mean, you know, even if, okay, I make a reservation and my sister brings her child's maybe 2 years old. And
sure,
you have to, I'm like, okay, can I just make this reservation for 4 instead of 5? And it's like, no, you tell them you have 5 people so they can set the place, they can prepare, and then you'll have a better experience. If you're not going to go, cancel the reservation. Do the thing, because the people that are doing the reservations and the canceling and the hostesses are people too. You know, that's, yeah, as simple as that. And they deserve,
amen,
our respect. And that's what I'm saying. You know, lift a finger, take the 30 seconds it takes to go online and make the cancellation. It's not hard, man. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. By the way, I might have Googled spittoon just to make sure that I knew what you were talking about. Is it one of those brass ones? I might have Googled that just to look up the visual. All right, we'll take a break. We got a lot coming up on the show.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. A bunch of stuff to talk about, as I usually say. First, the GOP is very, very upset with the House Speaker. Many Republicans are saying that he got rolled, or he got, you know, taken to the cleaners, whatever your expression is of choice that you want, as far as deciding to continue to fund the government. Here's what I'll say about it. I do think it's kind of interesting that so many people believe it to be, say, an unacceptable, and Speaker Johnson might be in this group of people, by the way, but an unacceptable outcome to go ahead and let the government stop for a bit, to just not fund it, to just see what happens, to just go that road. The reason why I think it's funny that that's an unacceptable situation to some is that it's what we actually should do. And I mean this not trying to be on a far side of an aisle or not trying to play Marjorie Taylor Greene audio for you or anything like that, although I do have it. And I have Speaker Johnson as well talking about this stuff, and I have a lot of other politicians that are mad at him right now. But here's the thing that I think is so interesting about this is you wouldn't notice, and I wouldn't notice, if the government stopped being funded for a small amount of time. If it was a large amount of time, sure, we'd notice more. There'd probably be some disruptions. People who work for the government, they'd notice right away. That would not be good. And by the way, I do think it's ridiculous, and I always want to say this when I bring up this topic, that we would stop paying our men and women who are serving this country in our military for any amount of time, whether or not the politicians can agree or disagree on stuff. We should always be paying that check. And I know Republicans put a bill forward a little while ago that would have done that. But the thing that I don't understand is if we actually all referred to the way the government spends money in our own lives as appropriately as we could, they're a teenager with their first credit card that keeps maxing it out, and we keep giving them more money to keep going again and again and again. And everyone believes that. Most Americans would say, yeah, no, the biggest reason that we have the problems we do in our economy is government spending, and we need to reel that in. We need to stop that whatever way we can. And so I just think that's so fascinating that if it were, and I know whenever anybody gives the kind of analogy I just provided, they're like, well, that's not at all comparable to how the government actually exists. And what? Of course it's not. I want to make the comparison to make it as digestible for all of us when I say that every parent, Republican, Democrat, but I don't care who you are, would cut their kid off if their kid was spending like our government spends, and then tell them to figure it out. And the biggest reason that we need to do this, but we need to support politicians who would do this, is because we need the government to start behaving as if they don't just get the money no matter what. Because I do think that's the biggest problem as well, is that they just behave that way. All right. There's one other piece of audio I do want to play. It's definitely a different topic, and I'll just play it quickly. I think this is Fox 25 in Boston that actually is using this audio. This is the governor of Massachusetts discussing how it'll just happen from time to time. The horrific story of a 14-year-old girl who was attacked and raped by an illegal Honduras immigrant here in this country. I want to play this audio because this is surreal to hear. And yet this is the opinion of a lot of people, a lot of places, is that this is a byproduct of the fact that we refuse to actually enforce the law. The law being that you can't illegally come into our country. And if you do come into our country illegally, we deport you. We don't let you stay. But I do want to play this because I do think it's just sort of shocking that someone, anyone, could say this about this type of story and walk away from it thinking that it made sense to voters or to anyone. Here we go.
As the vetting process falls far short.
And to be able to say honestly that you're truly vetting anyone, I think is dishonest.
The governor says Alvarez came to Massachusetts through a federal program.
This is also an individual who came in lawfully under the federal government through a federal program. You know, it speaks somewhat to the issue that states are having to deal with now in terms of the mass numbers coming across the borders.
We asked Governor Healey if she can prevent this type of incident from happening again.
You know, unfortunately, we have security and systems in place. We have vetting in place. It is unfortunate that you know, from time to time, things will happen.
But Representative DeCoste says the vetting.
Hold on. It is unfortunate from time to time that things will happen is, again, and I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say this, one of the most surreal things I've heard a politician say about a story as awful as this one. And yet it doesn't really seem to be all that surprising when you think about a lot of how we're discussing these topics right now in our society, but it's definitely wrong. Whether or not it's surprising doesn't matter. Wrong matters more. A quick break, a lot coming up. Craig Collins filling in, Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Matt and Carl hang out as they do every single morning on this show. I thought this was pretty interesting. If you're in love with a coworker, that's really the way that this story starts. It might not be what you think it is. I think the New York Post and a few other people put this out there. They're calling it workplace or office goggles. Which I guess is somewhat similar to beer goggles. It means that if you work every day with someone, you might eventually decide that they're more a fit for you than, say, if you weren't already forced to be around them on a somewhat consistent basis. And so your crush, your, you know, desire to maybe screw up your workplace by dating somebody and then having a terrible breakup occur might somewhat be because you don't want to date anyone else that you work with. This is the best of the options of the people that you're around every single day. I found that amusing. I don't know what we think about this.
That's against everything I've been taught over the last decade. You know, from human resources. I mean, I work for two companies, so I do decency training for two different companies, not to mention, you know, the other standard fare, which is fine because everybody deserves a safe place to work, and I totally get it. Listen, yeah. I mean, I've crushed on people at work before, but I tell you what, man, I can't go there. Because of that reason alone, I mean, it's like, who am I? And this person, you know, a lot of times they might have kids or a family or a husband. Sure. No, I'm kidding about the husband part. But it's something you look at and you have to have a little bit of decency about. So if that person is your one work crush and you work together intimately, yeah, you got to be really careful there about that. You have to be right if you make that move. You have to be 100% accurate. You can't miss there. You just can't.
Oh, you got it. You got to do the like years of will they or won't they? The Ross and Rachel at the workplace. Right. You cannot go right in and just try. Absolutely. You know what I find so funny about that is I know so many people in different generations. I'm a millennial. I know, Matt, you're kind of like on the cusp of Gen X and millennial. But I know a lot of people who met and fell in love with the person that they're married to today in at a workplace. And I know how much different this seems to be now or unacceptable it is now. What I find hilarious, though, is the idea that we would have a lower standard because of the people that we're around every day by force because of work. And then that's why they are calling this office goggles. And maybe that's why the relationships also don't work out now. There's a thing going on and it's been going on for a while now, like fear of missing out in the dating world that causes everybody to think that the, you know, better person is just around the corner or just one more like app swipe away, which I think is causing a lot of standard problems in relationships. Like if you don't like anything now, all of a sudden you're like, ah, that's too much. I'm going to move on to somebody else. But I don't know why I love it more as an office place thing, because I've never heard of that. And I've definitely heard of beer goggles. I've heard of it quite often, and I've seen it in action.
You know, the thing that's funny is, you know, without beer goggles, I can't date.
I got gotcha.
It's really tough. But think about it. You have beer goggles. You have coffee house goggles. You have, I don't know. I had hospital goggles at once for my doctor. She was beautiful. First thing I said when I woke up, oh, you're beautiful. You know, she never came in. She never treated me again. You could have gym goggles. You know, it just depends on what you're doing. But the point is, this is on us. I mean, and to be able to have that mental health and to be able to go out and meet new people, whether it be online. And I don't do the online dating thing. But if you're just focusing on that one person, that one particular element, and you are actively looking, you know, you got to spread your wings a little bit.
Buddy.
You know, you
got to
get out there. You got to see the world, feel the world, you know.
I love just the quick list of all those ones you just ran through. Cheerleader effect is another one I've heard of before, when like there's cute friends and then you think that the one girl is as cute as the friends, and then you find out when they're alone, the cheerleader effect isn't as strong as you thought it was. I've heard of all kinds
now,
of
wait,
things.
Wait, what is that cheerleader effect? So she has a friend and you think the friend's attractive.
So actually, and I think that How I Met Your Mother is one of the places that made this sort of a household thing, that TV show. It's when one individual looks better when she's with a group of friends than when she's by herself, because her friends are all really cute. So they call it the cheerleader effect, like a cheerleader team. Or I guess, you know, another one my wife would probably use, the firefighter effect. Whenever she sees a group of firefighters, she thinks they're all attractive and she says something like that about it, and it hurts the team. Yeah, I know it happens, man. But if you see one of these people by themselves, you're like, oh, maybe not as special as I thought they were.
That poor girl. I say that from experience.
True. You know?
I mean,
no, it's true, man.
I mean, you know, I think we've all been on both sides of that. We were that friend in the group, you know, where the group made us look better. At the same time, you know, we looked at somebody and was like, oh, you know, it's okay, you know, but try to get in the know person a little bit, you know.
There we go.
You know, and I say that because I'm superficial as hell, so you know. No. Never mind. Yeah,
I know. Matt, I love the fact that you're like, by the way, dating tip, try to get to know people. Don't try to just care about how they look and if you want to swipe a certain way. All right, we'll take a break. We got a lot coming up, including a woman who got fired from a teaching job for being a rapper, and I love her rapper name.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Tony Katz, the morning news, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. You've probably heard that by Monday, Trump has to come up with about $500 million, or New York is going to start taking stuff. They're at least going to try to start taking stuff. What's crazy about this is the political impact it has and the lack of care that our country for the first time ever has in being that politically, disruptive within our judicial system. It's just insane. But here's something that's even more laughable about it. CNN had an expert on, a luxury real estate CEO individual. Her name is Bess. She's talking, of course, to people who very often said just a few weeks ago that Mar-a-Lago was worth like $18 million, or that the judge in this case had determined a value that was insane for that one property, and how much money they'll actually make if New York takes it and then tries to sell it and sell it quickly. This is amazing to hear again, because I have to remind you that the left-leaning media, the legacy media, is the place that kept defending the idea that Mar-a-Lago was worth $18 million, because that was its evaluation during this court proceeding. Here we go.
You need at least 30 days to get any of these properties sold. But the property that you alluded to, Mar-a-Lago, potentially, that could be something that could be sold quickly. I think the valuation is something in the hundreds of millions.
What
and
now?
I think there could be a buyer for something like that.
Of
and that would be literally, if you're talking about doing that between now and Monday, that's picking up the phone, calling someone, and then literally writing a check.
Yeah, I mean, there could be plenty of international people who want to buy that property. I mean, there's properties that are priced at 150 and 200 million that are nearby that.
What now?
And Palm Beach is like the NVIDIA of real estate. It's just shot up like a rocket.
And Trump's real estate and his, you know, giant estate in Mar-a-Lago is bigger, fancier, nicer, tied to a former president, all that stuff. When you say that there's properties close by that are worth $150, $200 million, you're making an argument that is hilarious and amazing. It'll be insane if what you see happen, and actually, I don't know how exactly it would help Trump. I have read that the best possible scenario, if he actually does allow, and he can try to fight it still. I don't know if he'll succeed in fighting it. But if it does happen that New York takes his property, sells them for ridiculous amounts of money, and then goes ahead and moves on, and they'll sell them for less than they'll probably get if they were to actually try to sell them, you know, the way that Trump would if he actually was trying to offload Mar-a-Lago and not just, you know, randomly do it as quick as possible to the highest bidder. But again, what's fascinating is at the end of all that, he might wind up just getting money back. He wouldn't get his properties back, which would be devastating. But he would get back whatever amount of money New York makes in any sort of appeal. And this would be the most strengthening move you could possibly make as New York, as far as an appeal goes. All right, let's shift from there to Chicago. a place that you remember. Jussie Smollett once said was MAGA country, which was hilarious, as Jussie was making up all kinds of stuff and getting caught for it in courtrooms, even though a lot of mainstream media also believed and defended him for longer than they should have. But I love this. Mayor Brandon Johnson found out that Chicago voters don't want to pay a whole bunch of money to house illegal immigrants, to house, you know, homeless people, to do all kinds of things. They're not a fan of that. And so he was asked, Brandon Johnson, why'd Chicago make that decision? We thought that they were, you know, as liberal gets. And he blames MAGA country more or less again as the problem. This is also, as somebody who lived in Chicago for a long time, on the north side, where it was much safer than the south side, I can tell you that this is a ludicrous position to claim that, you know, there's anything other than a whole bunch of ideology on a certain side of the political aisle in a Chicago. And yet still people are saying, I don't want to pay these bills. I don't want to do this, because it's just it's not a right and left thing. I do not want to support people who have, you know, no means to support themselves and shouldn't even be here in this country, et cetera, et cetera. Here we go.
Also not lost on me. I think there were 38,000 Republicans that showed up and voted for Donald Trump or something like that in Chicago. So, you know, since if we're trying to draw some conclusions and you all want some other, you know, analytics you might want to discover, that might be something to look into, because there's, I'll just say it, there's a good chance that played a part in this referendum. So the same people who...
Hold on. Let me stop you for a second there. Good chance that played a part, that 38,000 people in a city of multiple millions of people somehow rejected any version of me trying to say that I very much want to give a whole bunch of free money to people who we don't think should have free money, no matter what side of the political... I love the idea, and this is the best way to say it, that no matter what the decision is, that the politicians want to blame the other side of the aisle for that decision-making if it doesn't agree with them. And so often the politicians refuse to actually understand, whether or not they understand it, I guess, is an argument for another day, but refuse to understand what the voters are screaming at them. They remain out of touch by will, by sheer ignorance or sheer determination to you know, never acknowledge when their own side of the aisle is resoundingly rejecting the things that they're offering to the people. And they'll just keep doing it again and again and say, oh, how dare those evil people on the other side of the aisle that don't want this thing that obviously is right. And all you good people want it, when a whole lot of people are sitting there being like, yeah, no, we don't want that. We'd like you to not do that. Please, as soon as possible, go ahead and not do any of those things. All right. Quick break. A lot more. Craig Collins filling in. Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Damned in this traffic jam, how I hate to be late. It hurts my motor to go so slow. Damn this traffic jam, time I get home my sup will be cold.
Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Matt and Carl hanging out as they do every single morning on this show. We've heard stories about teachers losing their gigs. Most often the one that goes viral is a teacher who's on a certain website, and she shouldn't be on that website. And because of that, parents get upset that she's teaching children and she gets fired. I think I even saw one person just get fired again for that. That's not what this story is, by the way, just throwing it out there as a more typical version of what you see in the weird world in which we live today. This version I don't see often. A Michigan teacher says that she was fired because she has a I'm not sure how successful, but side hustle as a rapper. Her name is Dominique Brown. Her rapper name is Drippin' Honey, which I can't possibly tell you any better than the way I just said it. There's no way to make that something different. Here is Drippin' Honey talking a little bit about getting fired for chasing a passion, chasing a dream, while also being a teacher in Michigan.
Nobody even knew I was a rapper until the parent kept continuously complaining. The first meeting that I had was like the principal and the dean, they had told me that the parent wished to stay anonymous, and she felt as if she didn't like my rap career and that I was a bad influence on the kids because I rap. My mind and my heart was telling me two things. I couldn't see myself giving up my other passion just because somebody didn't like it. They say erase all your content. That was the ultimatum, erase all your content. I'm just like, respectfully, I can't do that.
Okay, two things real quick. First, I would have loved it as a kid to have a bunch of famous rappers be teachers for me in school. That would have been awesome. Would it have been good? No, probably not. But like Snoop Dogg then handing to someone else would have been awesome as a kid. Drippin' Honey, I'm not sure works as well though. Matt, what do you got?
Well, when I hear the name Drippin' Honey, I channel a Cardi B song about a bucket and a mop.
Sure.
That's the first thing I kind of think of. And my thing is this, okay, and I remember a story from New York City from several years ago about a retired adult star who was teaching the third grade, and she got 86 because the parents got mad about it. And at the time, I'm like, what does it matter as long as she's teaching your kids math and science the appropriate way? And as long as she's not bringing that into the classroom. But now that I'm a little bit older, I can see why parents might have a problem with this. Now, I'm not comparing adult entertainment to rap music, not at all. As a matter of fact, if Drippin' Honey's lyrics are clean and they're motivating and they're okay, I have absolutely no problems with that, but I'd have to see her lyrics. I mean, if she's coming out like Uncle Luke and Two Live Crew, we may have an issue here. That's all I'm saying. It needs a little more context, but at the same time, I understand why parents might have a problem with it. Like the site you were referring to earlier was OnlyFans, right? That's what you were talking about. When a teacher shows up on OnlyFans, and I mean, myself, I don't think I'd have a problem with my kid, but I kind of get why other parents would. It's just different values, man. It's a conglomerate of the whole thing, you know?
It's the best thing to say it that way. And I love the fact you said, I want to know what Drippin' Honey's lyrics are. That's not a sentence you're going to hear a lot
really
of places.
I really do.
And I hope they're just all like math and stuff. I hope she's the new version of Schoolhouse Rock. That would be amazing. It's definitely not bad
she's
at all.
She's the Animaniacs.
Anyway. Right,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, she's a brand new thing. You got to check it out. No, anyway, I agree with you. And I think what's interesting about like the women who are on places like that wind up losing their job. And I know that I just saw a story. It must have popped up on Facebook or something. I don't think I went looking for it. They claim that a woman got fired and moved to a completely different state and got fired again when they found out about the same thing. She didn't give up the career. She just tried to reinvent herself. I think the problem is how great kids are at navigating the internet. That's what I think the issue is. Because if kids weren't good at finding this stuff, then I wouldn't care as much if a teacher had something else they were doing, you know, that's not child appropriate outside of the classroom. They're just too good at finding it. And once children find it, you know, then we have a lot of problems. Because then if they're showing up in a classroom and being taught by a person who's behaving a certain way and they think of that person as a role model, then a lot of parents could say, I don't want that, individual to be seen as a role model for my child. And that I do understand. However mean that sounds, if you don't want to raise your kid to do certain stuff, you can't have a teacher in a classroom benefiting from the things you don't want them to, you know, we wouldn't, I'm not trying to equate this either because, you know, it's not necessarily illegal, but you wouldn't want someone that's breaking laws to be teaching your kids in a classroom either.
It's apples to oranges. It really is. You make an excellent point because even if you go reinvent yourself and if kids can find it on the internet and they find this and this becomes public to the PTA, then you have a problem because it's a distraction in the classroom.
Absolutely.
If kids know your teacher is involved in that, especially if you're getting to the 13, 14, 15, for me, I think
of
it was 11. 11 years old. I mean, those males are going to have a hard time figuring that out. And so will some of the females, too. So it's really, you have to make that personal choice. You have to say, if I'm going to go do this, I might not be able to do this anymore. There has to be some sort of personal responsibility there.
That was the most eloquent way I've heard it ever said, that a 13, 14-year-old boy who finds out his teacher's on a certain site is going to have a hard time figuring out a lot of things. There's going to be confusion all across the board, to say the very least. That's a confusing time for many of us, as we all remember. What were you going to say?
Oh, Matt? No, I was just saying, I didn't even mean that, but that's fun.
I didn't mean, I just thought that it is confused. That's what I thought was funny. No, I wasn't making another joke. Real quick before we take a break, is your bracket totally destroyed already by NC State or by Oakland?
No, I had Duquesne. I had NC State.
Wow.
But I picked against Tennessee, so I think it's going to be a little bit rough because I don't know what I'm doing. I don't pay money to get into March Madness. I just enjoy – it's like Christmas for me. I mean, everybody else is happy, so I'm happy. It's,
yes.
It's a lot of fun, and I'm happy that there's all this joy, and it's Indiana. It's a basketball town, and we have Purdue going tonight, and ISU's doing well in the NIT from what I understand. It is a good time to be a Hoosier. It's a good time to be in Indiana during March Madness. Hoosiers next year. For the Hoosiers, right?
I gotta pass on a text from my mom I never thought I'd get. And I used to do this as part of, I'm a millennial and my mom texts me a lot. I know I gotta take a break, but she's an educator and she said that, and she lives in South Bend, Indiana, by the way. I don't know if this is gonna shape anybody's opinion of this reaction. My mom said she's known a lot of teachers who danced in the evening during her career, and her reaction, pay teachers more money. I love that as a joke there. I do love that. Although I now do not want to know something that my mother has told me she knew about some of her
it's
colleagues.
It's not ballroom dancing, is it?
Sure. I don't think so. And I wonder how many of those colleagues educated me, Ma. That's the other question I have now.
What country teachers line taught dancing me? Again. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We'll take a break. You got some traffic for us, Matt?
Yeah, that's a great point. We're looking at
whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Tony Katz, the morning news. 93 WIBC. There it is. Hot for teacher. That was nicely done by producer Carl after the conversation we were having in our last segment. But Tony Katz, the morning news, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Not even going to explain that. You got to go back and look for it in the podcast, which is also all up there very quickly after the show because of producer Carl. All right, let's play this audio first. This I find very, very interesting. This is Jamal Bowman, the guy who likes to pull fire alarms on occasion, calling what's going on right now as far as the amount of money you have to pay for rent or for housing compared to the amount of money you make in your life. He calls it plantation capitalism. There's no way to sanitize that. That's literally the words he chooses to use. Jamal Bowman is a black man, if that changes your opinion of the craziness in this conversation or in this statement, but here we go.
It is plantation capitalism to have someone paying 40, 50, 60% of their salary towards rent. That is plantation capitalism. Rent should be capped at 20% of someone's salary.
All right. Here's a lot of problems that you have with this situation. So depending on where you live right now, rent does not cost 40, 50, 60% of your salary. It simply doesn't. If you live in a big city, it absolutely does. It might cost even more than that, especially if you have a job where you probably shouldn't be living in the city you're living in. And that is a huge part of the missing component to even talking about this. And if you were to say cap rent at 20%, places like New York City would be even more in trouble than they are right now in a lot of ways. And people who say own fancy buildings there would be in a lot of trouble. I find that hilarious that this conversation or this version in D.C., of course, where they're making these statements and where the politicians themselves pretend to live some of the time, I think. Is ridiculous as far as costs go. But the idea that someone who, say, owns something and can sell it for a certain price has to be limited because of the thing that they own is anti-American. It's not plantation capitalism. It's not any of that. It's saying that your business of owning a apartment or owning land, owning something, deserves to only make you so much money in this society, and everyone else is stuck in that same boat. And who cares if demand is so high that people would pay more and more and more for something? It's ridiculous. It's insane, and it's couched in this really stupid way of telling you that they're trying to just do something that's fair or better for society. If you don't want to pay 60, 70, 80% of your salary move to a place that doesn't cost that, because a lot of America still doesn't cost that. I can say that as someone who lives outside of a big city and not within a big city at all. You do have that option. You do have that power to move a place, find a job, and wind up making more, comparable to your cost of living than if you just refuse to do that, which is the first part of many of the reasons that the plantation capitalism claim is just ridiculous elitism at the very least. All right. One other thing I do want to play, and it's something that I find very interesting. There's more and more conversations now about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and about anyone who's saying that these individuals don't have a realistic, say, chance at getting elected. What I find so funny, though, is the Democratic position seems to have changed profoundly on some of these topics, at least to me, and especially with R. F. Kennedy Jr., because he is gaining, and he's absolutely gaining on Biden more so than on Trump. And he's doing it by saying things that are to the left, radical and crazy. So now they have to shape him as something horrible and ridiculous when they really can't face the reality that their candidate is so terrible, so awful that people would turn to alternatives, even if they don't agree with most of the stuff that this person's saying, just because that individual is better than their candidate. I'm not trying to say that I disagree with a lot of the stuff that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has said, although there's definitely policies that make me think a whole lot of conservatives shouldn't be voting for him come November. But nonetheless, here we go. Let's play this audio of Jen Psaki on MSNBC talking about how terrible the anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. really is.
He doesn't believe in science and all sorts of other things. Right. But I will say, Mika, I was nodding along as Tom was just talking. I think this is the biggest challenge. There is unquestionably Trump has broad support in his base, as we've just been discussing. And we've seen that play out in the primary. That's the only piece, though, we know at this point. He has problems among independents and problems with an expanded electorate. But these third party candidates are a huge, huge, huge problem. And there's a number of them. If you look at RFK Jr., it's the name recognition issue, as Tom was just talking about. And there are still states in this country, Georgia is one of them.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. I don't even care about all the rest of this. You know what I find so amazing that's also just sort of baked into this discussion from Democrats and their fear of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. instead of Trump is how they need to go ahead and attack an opponent to win at all. They don't want to talk about the successes of this current president. They don't want to talk about the likelihood of this president being, say, mentally fit for four more years if he's not already mentally incapable of the job. They just want to find the best possible way to attack all the alternatives and pray to God that you don't vote for anyone other than Biden if you're someone on their side of the aisle. He has no support with his base. Well, he has some, but he doesn't have anywhere near the support with his base that Trump does. And bad news for Jen Psaki, Trump got a whole lot of votes in 2020, a whole lot of votes. I can't imagine they all came from his base. So if he just gets the same amount of votes in 2024 and Biden's apathy or Robert F. Kennedy or whatever you want to call it causes a very different turnout for Democrats, and there's, well, not enough cheating to overcome that, then I have to be honest, there's zero chance that Biden is an electable politician. That's where this conversation should be going, not these other roads. All right, quick break, a lot more. Craig Collins filling in. Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Matt and Carl hanging out as they do every single morning on this show. I have a couple somewhat adult topics. We're going to do them as PC as possible, though, because it's morning radio, darn it. So we'll be fine. But before I get to those, this is definitely 100% not an adult topic. I actually feel like this makes everyone in this generation still officially children. Almost half of Gen Z is afraid of flying. They're afraid of flying because in the news, Boeing doesn't care about its safety, which makes sense. And I understand that. But half of Gen Z goes, I've lost the ability to trust flying. I can't get on a plane, can't go anywhere. I'm not okay with this. I have to be honest, even though there have been challenges, we still have a sterling record as far as the amount of planes that crash and the amount of people that get injured. And I don't say that as if I'm trying to ask for anything different of society and the world. Please don't make this a karma thing. But nonetheless, I find this hilarious. And I find this to be exactly the problem with being on the internet, on social media all the time, every day of your life, as you wind up overblowing all the stuff that gets talked about there. And then you refuse to fly. Matt, you want to react to this one?
Yeah, if you're not on flying, then if you don't like flying, then you're not old enough to drink yet. Part of it is like having the Bloody Mary before the plane and then getting on the plane. Flying sucks. I used to love to fly. And it's not even the fear of crashing into a mountain or something awful or unthinkable happening. It's more of a thing. It's uncomfortable. The flights aren't guaranteed. The flights are expensive. Everything you can think of. It just makes the whole thing a miserable experience. Now here at Indianapolis, we have the world's greatest airport. We have an outstanding airport, and it's very convenient. It's comfortable. They do everything they possibly can to make it a fun experience. But once you get into that line and get onto that plane, it's not good. And I mean, we don't want overregulation, and the FAA does its job. I get that with Boeing and everything. But the airlines, to me, it seems like they're not making this any easier. They're in at the profit. Gas prices go up, and they're saying, okay, so do your prices. We have to pass this along to the consumer. And it's just not a good experience right now. And there's no alternative. There's none.
I didn't know how much I needed a Matt Bear rant about the crappiness with flying in a plane in my life, but I appreciate that now, man. That was a great one.
I can't remember the last time I was on a plane. You know, I can't even remember. So.
I absolutely agree with you, by the way. The part of flying that I don't like is all the stuff that used to be fancy about it that's now been, ripped out to be as cost-effective as possible for the airlines and still not really all that affordable. And then on top of that, there's so many other challenges you face in just the annoyingness of being on a plane. I get that. But I do think that if you're afraid of a plane going down, especially if you're a younger person, that you're not actually paying attention to the tremendously unlikely scenario that happens and you get hurt, even as Boeing has had its problems, not defending them, just saying that we're still lucky to live where we do and have what we have access to. A couple other quick things. These are adult topics. And so that's the warning, I guess, if ever there's going to be one. The first one, a guy went on Reddit. One of my favorite places on Reddit, am I the jerk, is what I say. Am I the A word is the correct way to say it. And he said that his wife, and I guess he lives in California, recently got a bunch of plastic surgery and he's not a fan. He was very upset. He begged her not to do it. She did it anyway. And so now he's saying, who's the jerk? If my wife now looks and he said, Valley girl, or she gives me Valley vibes, maybe she looks more attractive in like societal standards, not to the husband though. He goes, I don't want anything to do with this. I'm very unhappy now. And if anything happens in their relationship, the lights have to be entirely off because I don't want to see her.
Oh,
I know. Ouch. That's harsh. And it's not that she's changed herself for the worse to other people, just to the husband, because she's not the woman he married.
Oh, my Lord. He's jealous.
Any quick reaction?
Yeah, he's jealous. He's jealous that she looks, everybody's paying attention to her.
Fair enough. That's a good one. That
might
be true.
How long have they been married? That's what I want to know. I mean, if this is a fresh
year.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. They're on their way to War of the Roses. That's how this started. You know,
it's definitely ending soon.
Somebody's falling from the chandelier. I hate to say
it. Thank you.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Tony recaps the morning news, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Lots and lots of conservatives are very, very upset with the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Whether or not it'll cost him his job, I don't know if we'll see that actually happen. $1.2 trillion. $1.2 trillion is the government funding package. A lot of controversial things within it, a lot of debate. The only thing I'll say about it, I don't want to, you know, belabor a point that you're probably going to hear other places, but it is true, is why not just shut the government down? Why do we care so much when they tell us we need to make sure the government's funded? We need to do this. Why? I made this example. I used this example before, and I'll use it again. And I know people will shout, it's not at all the same thing, but it kind of is. It's like if you have a teenager who just got a credit card for the first time and they maxed it out, and you pay it off and hand it back to them again and again and again, and they're just going to keep doing that. You got to eventually let them go through the process of not having a credit card they can use anymore, of it being maxed out, and you're looking at them being like, well, you got to figure this out. This seems like that's bad for you. Something's got to happen now. The government just keeps spending, assuming that they're going to get a whole bunch of money from us one way or another. And it seems like yet again, that has happened. All right. I want to move on, though. I know that's a big story, but I do want to play this. I found a couple reactions to the Bob Alinsky thing that happened yesterday. The testimony from Tony Bob Alinsky, in which he definitely went back and forth with a lot of Democrats. AOC made herself once again look like a moron, as she's pretty good at doing. But my favorite was actually Jesse Waters putting on Jordan Belfort. He is the Wolf of Wall Street guy. And a couple of the things that Jordan said were just awesome. Let's do this first one, and then we'll do the one where he's saying that we all know that Hunter wasn't doing any consulting, which is definitely true. But here's his first reaction to how funny he thought the back and forth was with Bob Alinsky. And he's right, it was. And I would play some of that, but I'm assuming you've heard a lot of that by now. Actually, you know what? I might have to play what the internet is comparing AOC to. But first, let's do this.
It tells me that the media right now is just so utterly corrupt because, you know, listen, I watched it. And by the way, I was laughing out loud at a lot of this stuff, like AOC with not knowing that, you know, RICO is a crime. Like you can't make this stuff up, right? But the fact that it's being reported on mainstream media is like there's no there. Nothing is happening. Is nonsensical. I mean, there's overwhelming evidence. You know, listen, they use words like plausible deniability. That's a cover story,
right,
in layman's terms. And you don't have 27 shell accounts and money moving back and forth through all these accounts. I know a little bit on falsely about money laundering. And
that is awesome when he says he knows a little bit about money laundering. Of course, he does, in fact, know quite a bit about it. I want him to keep going, though, about the shell accounts and how ridiculous it is to have so many of them. I love how he says that the guilt is sort of in the behavior itself. Why would you do all this if everything you're doing is on the up and up? It reminds me a lot of actually Fannie Willis in Georgia, too, the Fulton County Attorney General there, or district attorney there, who has been paying back her boyfriend in cash, is what they said, as far as the reason why her boyfriend, who's now, of course, resigned, Nathan Wade, wasn't actually spending government money on her because he was paying for trips, but she's giving him back money in cash. That behavior is ludicrous, and you would actually want a paper trail in those situations, as would the Biden administration if Hunter's not doing anything wrong. But here's a little more.
Listen, there is no reason for all these different shell companies. You don't move money from, you know, China into, you know, the British Virgin Islands into Liechtenstein. You don't do that. There's no reason for it. From company to, if the money was legit, it would go from the company to Hunter Biden or to that holding company in the United States and be distributed accordingly. There's no other reason for that. And it's one of these cases where, in the end of the day, the cover up is worse than the crime. It's almost like the cover-up is what gets you in trouble because it's just so guilty looking, so obvious what's yes. going on. If they just had wired the money, they could say, well, you know, I did consulting. Now, he didn't actually do any consulting. He didn't offer any services, so to speak. So they wouldn't have an excuse there either. But the fact that they went through all this effort to conceal, it tips their hand. You know
what's so interesting about that? It takes a Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort, who, you know, had his own issues with a lot of deciding to not really be honest about where money was coming from, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, played famously by Leonardo DiCaprio in the Wolf of Wall Street movie. To say it as succinctly as all of us are thinking it and saying it ourselves on television, you know, anywhere, because so much mainstream media is behaving as though there's no proof that Biden is corrupt or that Biden is, you know, part of a crime family, as Trump often calls it. It's just amazing to me. All right. On that note, we'll take a break. There is a new Beetlejuice documentary, or excuse me, trailer out there for the second movie. I'm assuming Matt Bear is going to know about this, so I'll play that and more in just a bit. Quick break. Craig Collins filling in. Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Matt and Carl hanging out as they do every single morning on this show. Okay, I have one more adult topic. I'm not sure if I should do it first, though. You know what? We'll do something else first. But I do have one more, and we're going to do it as well as we can in morning hours. But first, let's do this. There's a brand new Beetlejuice movie coming out. It's called Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I didn't say it the third time. And there's a new trailer, and I know that Matt Bear loves himself some scary movies, some horror movies. I don't know if you're a huge fan of Beetlejuice. Are you, Matt?
Well, yes, I was. But okay. It's different now because the movie scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. It was such a scary movie. Sure. It was conceptually. I watched the new trailer. You're talking about Beetlejuice 2 here. And
I am, yes.
I watched the trailer, and it opens up with the banana boat song. You know the Deo song from that iconic...
I actually have it. I can play it for you. This is over-the-top drama to me for Beetlejuice 2. But I love that you're going to go this road. Because here's a little bit of what Matt was just talking about. A very dramatic version of Daylight Comes and I Want to Go Home. Here we go.
Deo, me say Deo.
By the way, I love when... I stopped it for a second. I love when there's like the music that's dominant and crazy, and then you see scenes from the film, but you can't hear any audio. She's riding a bike, the new star, this one, Jenna Ortega, and you just hear dramatic song.
Daylight come and me want to go.
Okay, that's a children's choir at a funeral. That's insane.
That reminds me of Childish Gambino, This Is America. I mean...
Yes.
That's the vibe I get from that. I don't know why.
Yes. It's insane. But here, let's jump a little bit further ahead to when she actually unveils the little, you know, town and she releases the Beetlejuice. Here we go.
The juice is loose.
And that's...
Wait.
Yeah. Yeah,
what do you think, Matt?
Okay, it starts off and it has that iconic music, you know, from that scene in the first one where
Yes. Everybody
just starts singing, and that's the power of Beetlejuice, and he's Sure. Just this monster, this creepy monster. But it's a horror comedy movie, and that's why I didn't understand. They start off with this music, it brings you in with this drama, and I'm like, oh good lord, I'm thinking about the Ghostbusters reboots with Afterlife that was mediocre, and the second one is Sure. Getting awful reviews right now, even though it has Bill Murray in it, and I'm thinking this is what they have done to Beetlejuice. And then out of the darkness is Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice,
and
take my $20 right now, because I will watch Michael Keaton do anything. He is so iconic from my youth. Mr. Mom Sure. Was an amazing movie. Gung Ho was an amazing movie. Everything Sure. He is in, I have just loved, and I am here for Beetlejuice 2 just because of Michael Keaton. Do not screw this up.
He is a great Batman. It was the only reason anyone...
Yeah, terrific Batman. Amazing.
There's the only reason anyone would go see that horrible Flash movie that was absolutely terrible, is that Michael Keaton was Batman in it. But yeah, no, I agree with you that that moment when he says the juice is loose, weird phrase to choose, by the way. I feel like that's something right, they said right, about right, OJ right. A lot. Out of all the,
yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah,
your juice anyway, loose. The juice used to get loose every time he'd run on the field, and that's odd. But no, nonetheless, man, I do think that it's one thing to see them continue to remake movies and to do it poorly and to make you say, man, this isn't what my childhood, you know, made me feel. But then at the same time, darn it, once you have him back in the costume, you're like, all right, that's fine. I'll go ahead and at least give this one more go and then be sad walking out of the theater if it's not good.
Well, they're totally trying to create a new audience while grabbing the nostalgia out of us. I mean, sure. look at this character. Look at the girl who's riding the bike at the beginning. She looks so like Christina Ricci. And then, you know, you see her later in the trailer. So, yeah, they're trying to grab me while get the – it's so – X-er millennials like me will take our kids to go see this movie, and that'll drive up sure. the box office. That's the whole intention right now. I just hope they do a good job. I hope it's a good movie. I love Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a good movie, me but either. I do think Keaton will probably do well.
It's going to suck. See. Yeah.
Sorry about that. All right, I want to talk about this other topic that I saw out there, and this, again, is adult in nature. I can't help it. I just couldn't get over this. So I guess there's some sort of relationship expert that went viral on social media for trying to give people tips on how to have a successful dating life in a certain way, but then also not drive up your quote-unquote body count, which is something that people care about now. It's a term that I don't really want to define on Tony's show in the morning. But what I find hilarious about this is the tip is terrible because it says you just have to find a few friends that you can, you know, have certain types of relationships with and keep them in your life. And that way you don't wind up, you know, having more relationships with more strangers. And that's the trick. I don't know why you need a expert to weigh in on any of this stuff and why people care about, say, some of these. I don't know what happened to the world we live in now to where this is the question that the young people need answered, and this is the answer to the question.
So what does the expert teach you? And we don't have to be exact or go into detail, but what kind of I want to know what kind of advice the expert is going to give me. I mean, he's going to look at me and says, hey, you suck with women. I'm going to be, thanks, expert, and that's going to be the end of it. I want to know, is he telling people to practice safe, be safe about it? Is he saying, you know, have multiple? What exactly, where does he take Gen Z here? And what does he provide them that they don't have right now?
I love two things. First, you assumed it was a dude, and it's actually a woman giving the advice.
All right, I'm working on it.
No, it's fine.
That hasn't sunk in yet. My misogyny is still there.
No, that's not what I meant. I would assume it was a dude, too, because it's saying a lot of stuff that a lot of dudes would be fans of. That's what I'm going to say. The first one is, if you have an ex and some of the things about the relationship were good, don't let that ex totally disappear is what it
says. You've got to be kidding me.
No, that's in there. And then it also says have a couple friends where the understanding is just that you're never going to officially be in a relationship, but from time to time, that friendship might get confusing for people. And that's the workaround from just dating more people and potentially having, you know, more risky behavior in your life, is have a few people that you keep in one side of your mind for when that is necessary. That's the expert opinion to keep the, quote, body count down, but the romance not.
I categorically disagree with all that. First off, with the exes, I was in a lot of toxic relationships, and I was more than half the problem in those relationships. And there's an expectation by one party or the other. Everybody says we're going to mutually agree to do this thing with no strings attached. And I'm telling you, I've never been in that kind of situation where there were no strings attached.
Sure. Okay?
And that's just me. Somebody might have a different experience, but I'm not going to go out and tell somebody, hey, be part of this ex is life, even though your relationship was awful. Right. That's bad for everybody's mental health. And secondly, how does keeping the body count, what does that have to do with romance? Where are we with that? I mean, people are paying this guy money. I'll do it for free.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I'm using my words selectively because it's the morning radio. But the thing that I couldn't get over and the thing I really wanted to talk about for this otherwise salacious topic is that young people need this advice, that young people are like, how do I, you know, have a certain experiences while also not having a whole lot of individuals make a list of history in my life? And this is the reaction to that is when your ex from a couple of years ago texts you at 2 a.m., you up, answer that text, apparently, is the expert opinion
out there. That's so interesting. It really is fascinating to me because the younger generation, I mean, it's so online. And dating online for me has been horrific. Even when I was doing it in my late 20s and 30s, it was even bad then. I'm 45 now. And with Gen Z, they're not... They don't have the personal experience that we had when we grew up. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily. I'm just saying it's harder to meet people face to face because you don't have that practice. You don't have that experience with man, woman, or man, whatever it might be. You don't have that face to face interaction, you know, and it's tougher that way. You practice everything. Everything takes rehearsal.
And one last thing that I will say about this, if I were asked for advice from a young person on how to keep your body count down, get in serious relationships only. Just try that. And if that works for you, great. If that doesn't work for you, well, then the body count might not stay low. Yeah. I don't know what the solution is other than that. All right, Matt, save us with some traffic.
I don't want to say anything. That didn't work for me either, but, you know, I'm not the guy to ask about any of this.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
How bad is it?
Don't sugarcoat it. Give it to me straight.
Want coffee?
I think I need some coffee.
Tony Katz, Morning News, 93 WIBC. My name is Craig Collins filling in. Let's fill up on some news, some economic news. I do think this is interesting. And I saw this post, or excuse me, this take more than one place. And I think a research lead at JP Morgan is being credited with this thought. Immigration is what it says is boosting the U.S. economy. I think what they mean to say is illegal immigration. And the claim being that in some way, some form, right now we're benefiting from the amount of craziness that's happening at our border and in our country. And I do think that that's insane. And I'll tell you why I think that's insane. The biggest reason that that makes absolutely no sense is that if there's some sort of benefit as far as spending in our country goes from people who aren't paying taxes or people who are getting free money from our government, that spending is coming at a cost of the spending of our government in the first place, or, you know, the lack of tax money, et cetera, et cetera. There's a bunch of avenues to go down to dismiss the idea of this as being categorically good and not absolutely bad for us. Government spending in general is one of the biggest causes of a lot of our headaches, a lot of our issues, according to many economists. So I do think it's interesting that as we have a $1.2 trillion government spending bill that's going to, be criticized by a lot of Republicans, but something that the Speaker of the House seemed to agree to. You have these weird economic takes coming out. CNBC, I think, is one of the places that ran this story, and some other ones did. And it's a very wishful thinking, very, you know, ignoring a lot of obvious negatives in discussing it or, you know, going down this road in the first place. So I just thought it was fascinating. I'm not bringing it up to you because I think it has credibility. I'm bringing it up to you because of how significant I think some of these decisions are, or this, you know, dedication to a certain narrative is, that it takes hold this way. Because it's very easy to refute and argue that. Also, I do see that the Fed said recently that they're going to start easing some of the things they've chosen to do, to say, to try to pull back on inflation in our economy. Whether or not that's something that'll actually be effective is certainly something we can all talk about. But my favorite is that investors are now trying to decode what, you know, fairly soon or in the near future, as far as phrasing goes, what does that actually mean? When does that actually occur? Because it didn't occur now, but Jerome Powell said at some point in the future, some of these moves that we've made to try to tamp down inflation by being tighter, essentially, through the Fed, will start to go away. But it's your guess as good as mine as to what that really does, in fact, mean. And I do love, I'll say one other thing about this. I didn't mean to rant about this, but I am. One other thing I love is when people reference the unemployment rate and say how that's such a great sign that our economy is doing so well. I don't think that that's even remotely close to true for two reasons. The obvious one, and the one we talked about a lot during the pandemic, was that if you take long enough to not find a job, you're no longer unemployed. According to these numbers, you're just no longer in the workforce. So there's still a lot of people that qualify in that bracket that make the unemployment numbers look better than they do. But the other reason I think that unemployment is at a low is that people are actually working three jobs, whatever it is, to make ends meet, they're not necessarily working one full-time job that covers the cost of their livelihood because of how expensive stuff is, and they're getting canned from that. Part-time jobs are on the rise. Every time they talk about job creation, it's almost always disproportionately part-time gigs because more and more people find, I guess, some sort of maybe security in not getting canned from jobs like that and finding a way to make shift an amount of money that actually keeps you afloat or somewhere relevantly close to that as the economy is as expensive and ridiculous as it is. That's not success. That's not us doing what the American dream is designed to be, which is a, you know, full-time job that covers the cost of living, et cetera, that helps us actually find a way to tamp down on a lot of the challenges that we're all facing. It's just, it's amazing. Our economy has gotten worse. Our life experience has gotten worse. We all know it. And yet the claim is that, hey, things look pretty good when we just look at the data in this one way and ignore any of the variables that we don't like about it. And that feels like what's happening for sure right now. All right. On that, you know, there's a lot of ranting about the economy, probably stuff you already knew. Who knows? Quick break. A lot more. Craig Collins filling in. Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The final countdown. Nice. This is Craig Collins filling in. Tony Katz, The Morning News, 93 WIBC. You got Matt, you got Carl hanging out as they do every single morning. Look, there's one story out there that I was debating if it's a serious topic or a silly topic because I can't help having a serious take on it. But we'll see what everybody else thinks on this. So there's these kids in Houston that are arrested now. I think the FBI arrested them, three of them. They're being called the Little Rascals. They robbed a bank. And the way in which they did it is they handed a threatening note to a teller. And it said that they had a gun and that if they weren't given money, that they would harm people. The ages of the kids are 11, 12 and 16. The police did find a gun when they arrested the children or the I don't even know what the right word is for it, the criminal kids. The 16-year-old seems like maybe the person who had the gun and the other two seem like they participated somehow in this. The thing I can't get over, though, this is the serious take on the otherwise silly to some people topic, is calling these kids the Little Rascals because the Little Rascals didn't have a gun episode where they went into a bank and stole money with a threatening note. It seems to be sanitizing the behavior that we're seeing a lot in society of young people doing really bad stuff by describing them as the Little Rascals, which I don't understand why that's happening. That's my problem with this story, is that referring to them with that innocent moniker is behaving as though they didn't commit a crime and threatened to shoot somebody.
No, I don't remember that episode where the Little Rascals robbed the Federal Reserve. I don't think
happen.
I'm kind of picturing them riding away on their bikes and then the blue canister explodes in the bag of money and it gets all over their faces and their bikes and everything. Actually, that would have been a great episode now that I think about
it. That would have been terrific.
No, don't call them the Little Rascals. Don't call them anything. I mean, tell them what it is. Right. We have criminals here that did something illegal and now they go to jail. It's simple as that.
Yeah.
We don't have to be cutesy. We don't have to have little rhymes and reasons for everything we do here in society. We can just call it what it is. It's fine.
Hey,
you know?
Amen. And honestly, man, the other thing I thought about is we're seeing a lot of this, a lot of kids that are committing pretty significant crimes. I'm talking about carjackings. I'm talking about all kinds of things. I'm not just talking about, you know, the inevitable harm that's done from one teenager to another teenager in society that's gotten worse than before. But there's a lot of young people doing increasingly really bad things. And this seems to almost placate or almost behave as though, you know, oh, well, it's just little rascals handing a note to a teller and threatening to shoot her if she doesn't give them money.
Craig, I've been saying this for years. We need to get back to shoplifting, okay? It's back in my day, yeah. we just took a candy bar from the Piggly Wiggly there at 9th and Main. You know, it was the only stoplight in town. The getaway was easy. I mean, it wasn't hard. Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of times, I mean, it's viral. They see these things on TikTok. They see tough guy attitudes of people, you know, flashing their piece and getting away with things. This is my guess. I've maybe watched 10 seconds of a TikTok video in my life. But, you know, it's the same thing when we were kids. We would see somebody be like, yeah, that guy's cool. He's getting in trouble in high school. Sure. I want to do that. I want to get sent to noon detention. I want to be, you know, suspended. This was me and my crowd, okay, by the way.
Sure, that's fine.
But what my point is, when we're younger, we are so influential. We don't get them up with this stuff on our own. We're taught it, man.
Yes. No, amen. And actually, I love what you said as sarcastically as you said it, that we got to get back to shoplifting, because I have told the story before and I won't tell it again of a 4 or 5 year old me shoplifting for the first and last time and getting caught by a cop doing it as my mom, I think, was pushing me in a cart. I just took some gum and I started eating it. And, you know, mom said I had to turn myself in. The cop said I'm getting away, you know, with a warning. I was lucky. My life went straight after that moment. But it definitely was a better thing than anything else. What were you
They didn't cuff and tase you. That's good. Okay.
They did. They were nice. They said it was close, that I was about to be in trouble. But no, it was awesome.
That's a cute story.
I vividly still remember every part of that, man. I remember the cop strolling over to me as I'm handing the gum back to the cashier and being like, it was close, man. It was real close for you. It's almost a life of crime.
That police officer's awesome.
Yes, he was. Two other quick things before we get out of here. The first one, there's a billboard that's causing a question to be asked all over the internet. Who is Cheese Guy? That's the real question. Apparently, someone put up a billboard in Kentucky that says this man consumes 20 gallons of liquid cheese a year. We cannot stop him. And it's a picture of a dude in like a college T-shirt eating macaroni and cheese, liquid cheese. A lot of questions emerge. Is he actually eating that much cheese? Is this family that are upset with him or like worried for him? The answer is no, that it's the brainchild of some young kid who took a picture of his friend and thought this was funny, but it is causing people to look into Cheese Guy, which I can't get over the effectiveness of this campaign and how we should probably make one similar for all of the radio stuff that we do.
What does he smell like? That's what I want to know. But what's the point
liquid
of this?
Cheese?
Exactly. What are we doing with the campaign? What are we trying to encourage or not encourage?
It's just nothing.
Cheese Guy, you know?
Right. It's the mystery of it is, and when you find it, I guess WCPO in Cincinnati, Channel 9, probably Always on Your Side or something like it, investigated this hard. They went real difficult, like real deep dive. And all they know is the kid who paid for it just thought he took a funny photo of his friend and then paid thousands of dollars for a billboard to be put up. Some like the effectiveness of the campaign is amazing because it makes no sense the further you dig.
I mean, what the hell? Why not?
Fine.
If you're going to do Cheese Guy, I'm going to start doing something with my fingernail clippings.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean,
honestly,
anything go viral, I guess. I just don't know what the point is. I don't know what he's doing.
We need to put a billboard up of Matt Bear eating some sort of food and say we need to stop, you know, Bacon Guy. And then that's it. And everyone will just not understand from there.
Oh, if I do it, it's going to be completely grotesque. It's going to be like chicken fat or something. I don't know. People are going to be like, I never want to speak to this guy again. You know, not like they're not already doing that, but...
One last thing before I get out of here. I saw this too. The U.S. Surgeon General is actually warning that social media is to blame for Gen Z having a midlife crisis already. That's actually what they're referring to it as. Apparently, people born between the ages of between the years of 97 and 2012 are suffering from the same experience as people who actually say they have a real midlife crisis, wanting to do certain things because social media is making them feel like they're behind everyone else in their group. This is insane. This is bad.
If I see a Gen Z or pull up in a Sebring convertible, I'm stealing their car, okay? Because it's not time for that yet.
Yes.
It's okay. If you're having a midlife crisis now when the real thing hits, you're going to have a bad time. That's what I'm saying. I don't know too many mid-40 bachelors who have had a midlife crisis and was like, yeah, that was outstanding, but that was so much better than my first midlife crisis I had back in my 20s. You just have bad times in life, insane. And that's okay. Yes. I mean, it's not.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a crisis. You have friends. You work through it. You work through it together. You
there
don't do alone. But if that's a midlife crisis, you wait until you hit the real thing. You wait until your first divorce. That's a midlife crisis.
Amen. And one last thing, just to let people know, social media is a lie. Everyone who has stuff, they don't necessarily have all
so
the things you think.
True. It's so true.
All right. See you guys Monday. See ya.
All right, Craig. We'll talk to you soon. Looking at northbound 37, slow traffic, Epler Avenue up to 465. Traffic sponsored by Drexel Interior. Go where the pros go. Drexel Interiors for Timberlake Kitchen and Bath Cabinets. Visit Drexel's Design Centers at 146th Street and River Road or on North Shadeland, online at drexelin.com. I'm Matt Baer with Traffic on the Fives. Follow us at WIBC Traffic.